Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy.
Good evening and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Jesse Bell, filling in this week for Dinah Jansen. Our first story comes courtesy of CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, and it covers the launch of the Isabel Bader Center's 10th anniversary season.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. On Wednesday night, the Isabel Bader Center for the Performing Arts hosted a launch event announcing the lineup for their 10th anniversary season. Director Gordon E. Smith took the stage in the Jennifer Velva Bernstein Performance Hall to present what the 2024-25 season holds. This anniversary season is curated around the theme of inspiration and alliances.
The season has been curated around the theme of inspiration and alliances. To celebrate inspirational retrospectives from the past 10 years and to explore perspectives for future programming.
The Isabel will be hosting 5 series throughout the year: the Virtuosi Soloist Series, the Ensemble Series, the Spotlight Series, the Friday Night Series, and the Children's Series. The season will be welcoming back some favorites, first-time guests, and debuting some new acts. September 20th, 2024 will mark 10 years since the day the Isabel opened its doors to the public. In celebration, they will be welcoming back Canadian Indigenous artist Jeremy Dutcher with a new band and new music. Smith also announced the renaming of the Karen Hitchcock Rehearsal Hall, now known as the Karen Hitchcock Recital Hall.
Just a little context here. As many of you will know, one of the jewels of the Isabel is what has been known as the Rehearsal Hall. In addition to being a valued rehearsal space, the Rehearsal Hall has become increasingly recognized as a wonderful performance space. Reflecting this shift to a dual purpose, I'm really pleased to share with you that the Rehearsal Hall has been renamed to the Karen Hitchcock Recital Hall.
In this spirit, the space will make its debut as the Recital Hall with the Friday Night Series starting in 2025, which will feature local and community artists working in folk, indie, and pop musical idioms. The lineup includes Tiny Horse, Cassador, Alex Mundy, and Chris Brown. This is sure to be an eventful season celebrating 10 years of the Isabel.
As you can see, this is a bold and ambitious 10th season program, and your support in whatever form it takes is incredibly important to making it a success. So thank you so much.
Thank you to Christina Laurie from CFRC 101.9 FM for that story. Up next, we begin our regional news with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for YGK News, Owen Fullerton, about the response local cruise lines have had to the continued closure of the LaSalle Causeway. With the closure of the LaSalle Causeway causing traffic disruptions both by road and by waterway, impacted cruise line businesses are considering legal action against the federal government. In a release from St. Lawrence Cruise Lines, the company says several vessels have been trapped in the inner harbor due to construction delays, leading to what is effectively a shutdown of the only dry dock in eastern Ontario. Public Services and Procurement Canada is responsible for the repairs of the bridge. St. Lawrence Cruise Lines was disappointed with the lack of answers they've received from Public Services and Procurement Canada in the response to their April 18th letter. 2,000 island ships, the Island Star and the Island Belle, are moored in the harbor, in addition to the St. Lawrence Cruise Line ship, the Canadian Empress. The lack of availability of those ships could mean, collectively, lost income from close to 400 passengers per voyage. The causeway was set to open on May 1st, but an incident during construction in early April has caused a need for repair work, for which a clear timeline has not yet been given. Jason Clark, president of the St. Lawrence Cruise Lines, says the delay is unacceptable. St. Lawrence Cruise Lines is not the only service provider hit by the delay, however. Both Thousand Islands Cruises and Metalcraft Marine have been impacted by the causeway's closure. In a press release, St. Lawrence Cruise Lines said that their seasonal business has already felt the impacts of the causeway's closure, with the company being forced to cancel the first voyage of the season for the Empress, which had been set to take to the water on May 10th. President Jason Clark says it's unlikely that this will be the last canceled trip. There is a way to open part of the channel to, quote, ease the situation, but Clark accused Transport Minister Pablo Rodriguez and local Liberal MP Mark Gerritsen of sitting on their hands. Clark said that a lack of response will lead to legal action. Kingston and the Islands MP Mark Gerritsen provided a statement in response, saying he understands the frustration around the causeway's closure, but that the top priority needs to be the safety of the crews and public. The release from St. Lawrence Cruise Lines, co-signed by Thousand Islands Cruises, says the solution is obvious. They say the preferred response is to schedule several temporary lifts of the bascule bridge, either with the bridge's own mechanism or with a crane. The proposal goes on to say that if this is not possible, then the low concrete span of the bridge should be temporarily removed in one section to allow passage by marine traffic. The cruise line operators say the work could be timed to coincide with bascule bridge repairs and not cause additional delays to vehicular traffic. Daniel Beals, operations manager for St. Lawrence Cruise Lines, says that Canada's Navigable Water Act includes what would be the basis for a legal challenge. He says the act states that the transport minister has a responsibility to step in when a project or structure is obstructing navigation for both businesses and the public alike. Beals says conversations with Transport Canada lead the interested parties to believe that it's possible that the act could be invoked. However, considering the waterway wasn't set to be open for the season until May 1st, the minister may not be procedurally able to do so until the repairs are officially in violation of the act. St. Lawrence Cruise Lines has already canceled their May 12th to 16th cruise, and Beals says that they're going to have to make a decision about the cruise that departs on May 16th within the next 2 to 5 days so they can give passengers time to sort out their arrangements if a cancellation is necessary. Beals added that with the Rideau Canal scheduled to open on May 17th, this debacle could block another major waterway. Thank you to Owen Fullerton from YGK News for that story. Up next, we have a story from the local journalism initiative reporter for The Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forestell, about the federal government's ambitious housing plan and what it could mean for the city of Kingston. The Public Lands for Homes plan was announced in Kingston last week during Kamel Kara, the Minister of Diversity, Inclusion, and Persons with Disabilities, visit to the region. The announcement occurred over the noon hour after the minister toured one of the city's nearly completed mixed-income housing projects at 1318 Princess Street. Kara drew attention to the housing plan released last week by the Federal Minister of Housing and the Prime Minister. Kara noted that this plan was focused on three things: building homes quickly, making renting and owning more accessible, and helping those who can't afford a home. Kara stated that the housing plan will, quote, break down significant barriers to the construction of new homes, notably the scarcity and high cost of land. The housing plan has a set target goal of building 250,000 new homes by 2031. To accomplish this, the federal government would be using all available tools to convert public lands to housing, which would include leasing, acquiring other public lands for housing, and retaining ownership wherever possible. Kara shared plans to build homes on Canada Post properties by enabling Canada Post to prioritize leasing or divesting properties and lands with high potential for housing. Similarly, the government will be building homes on Department of National Defense lands by exploring the redevelopment of properties that could be suitable for both military and civilian uses, divesting 14 surplus properties with housing potential, and building and renovating housing for Canadian Armed Forces personnel on bases. Plans are also underway to convert underused federal offices into homes, with $1.1 billion being invested over 10 years to transform 50% of the federal office portfolio into housing. Kara explained that this would save $3.9 billion over the next 10 years, with $900 million per year in ongoing savings. This would allow more office buildings, particularly in urban areas, to be converted into homes for Canadians. Kara also pointed to other key measures to make housing more affordable and available, such as implementing the new Canada Rental Protection Fund, enhancing the Canadian Mortgage Charter, and creating a new Canadian Renters Bill of Rights. Kingston and the Islands MP Mark Gerritsen said the announcement underscores the, quote, groundbreaking impact Budget 2024 will have on Kingston. Gerritsen added that the conversion of public lands will provide the Kingston community with safe, accessible, and affordable housing. The Kingston and Frontenac Housing Cooperation housing project will include 92 units. In addition, Kingston Cooperative Homes Incorporated is preparing to construct a 38-unit affordable housing project adjacent to this site. Thank you to Michelle Dory Forestell from The Kingstonist for that story. Up next, we have a story from the local journalism initiative reporter for the Morrisburg Leader, Philip Blanchet, about the successful funding of 10 projects in South Dundas and Glengarry counties. Six out of the 10 projects approved in this year's Stormont, Dundas, Glengarry County's Regional Incentives Program are located in North Dundas. Council approved the 10 applications at the April 15th meeting. The six North Dundas projects account for 60.9% of the total funding in the program this year. SDG Manager of Economic Development, Tara Kirkpatrick, told Council that the $250,000 fund was topped up by the funds returned from two previously approved projects that did not move forward. In all, over $317,000 was handed out. In addition to approving this year's funding, Council also approved a move to increase the amount of time successful applicants have to complete a project from 12 months to 18 months. Kirkpatrick cited the delays involved within the construction trades and bureaucratic process as reasons for the extension of the project window. The 10 projects approved this year were the only 10 to apply. The six North Dundas businesses approved include Kempville Land and Sea, which is a 50-50 matching grant for up to $50,000. This money is to go towards a 7,800-square-foot planned showroom and warehouse for the company on County Road 1. Winchester Heights / Silicon Light Systems Incorporated for $46,100. This is a 50-50 matching grant for converting a former church and thrift store into an electronics store on St. Lawrence Street in Winchester. Smoky Ridge Vineyard for $39,211.54. A matching grant for facade, building, and signage improvements. Moorwood Lucky Mart receives $23,800 so the convenience store can improve its facade and make other improvements to the building. BGM RV Center received $23,710. This Chesterville business will extend its current building by 3,000 square feet. And lastly, Canamore Orchard received $9,202. The business will overhaul its commercial kitchen in its fudge factory, which has been shuttered for 2 years. Moose Creek business, Delhi Electric, received $50,000 towards the construction of a new 4,000 square foot building. Dennis Co. in Chrysler will get $13,746 towards signage and building improvements, and Moose Creek-based Wanna Make It Farm will receive $26,365 towards signage improvements and building conversion. In Williamstown, Famboot Ebene will get $33,230 towards its 1,600-square-foot cafe and bakery project. If completed, the 10 projects will account for $1.9 million in construction in SDG counties. Council approved the 10 businesses with no discussion. Thank you to Philip Blanchet from the Morrisburg Leader for that story. Next up, we have a story from the local journalism initiative reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island, Ted Evans, about Loyalist Township's response to the closure of Kingston's Public Health Ontario Lab.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. With the provincial government looking at closing six of its community-based Public Health Ontario labs, Loyalist Township is urging them to reconsider. Township staff believe closure of the labs will increase health inequities for rural communities and have impacts on clean drinking water. Noting the Safe Drinking Water Act of 2022, council are forwarding their motion to the Minister of Health, the MP and MPP of Hastings, Lennox and Addington, and all Ontario municipalities for their support. The labs in question collect and process thousands of water samples and time-sensitive medical tests each day. If closed, all material from rural areas would need to be sent to more centralized locations. Township staff noted concerns about the integrity of samples being compromised if the travel time for processing is increased. Deputy Mayor Nathan Townend talks about the local lab in Loyalist Township.
While these public health labs do not come under the direct jurisdiction of the boards of health, of public health itself, public health depends on them. A great deal. And our local lab is over 100 years old and has served the community for a very long time. And obviously, we all know what a tremendous asset they were with matters of capacity for testing and tracing during COVID.
Townend describes the possibility of the government reconsidering the closure.
The government has proven able to reverse course before, and I certainly hope that they will do so on this. I definitely feel very strongly that this is a message that needs to go out loud and clear.
Councillor Lorna Willis notes her concerns about safe drinking water.
My concern really is about the drinking water testing, and it's a fundamental service provided to people who live in the country. And just today, the Amherst Island Medical Clinic was collecting samples for everyone in the area. And I think that it's very important to rural residents to have the access to have those tests done on a regular basis.
Councillor Paul Broderick explains it's a province-wide issue for rural communities.
Not only for Loyalists, as we have a very heavy rural concentration of population, but as a member of the Conservation Authority, we see this at our monthly meetings, and I attended the Ontario annual meeting last week, and it's a high agenda item, and drinking water should be at the top of everybody's list.
For CJAI and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you, Ted, from CJAI-FM for that story. Next, we have CJPE Prince Edward County's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Brenda Little with a story about a dispute over the maintenance costs for County Road 49.
Hi, I'm Craig Foster, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJPE 99.3 County FM in beautiful Prince Edward County. Coming are some of the top stories from PEC. You can hear County FM news 5 days a week, six times a day on 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county, or stream us at 99.3countyfm.ca.
Since the download in 1998 of County Road 49, the road has fallen into disrepair and many people deem it as unsafe, including Councillor Braney, who stated, quote, quite frankly, always on the top of my mind, it's an unsafe road, and said there's an urgent need to rehabilitate the road. $250,000 has been spent researching a rehabilitation program, but as time goes on, everything will become more expensive. Several attempts have been made, asking both federal and provincial governments for assistance with the cost, but to no avail. The rehabilitation of County Road 49 has been supported by an 800-person petition, one of the largest petitions in Prince Edward County's recent history. Councillors stated it was even more disheartening in view of the recent announcement by the provincial government that Highway 174 in Ottawa and the DVP in Toronto will be taken back by Ontario. Council would like to see the same thing happen to County Road 49. For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca, and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to the team of Craig Foster and Brenda Little from CJPE Prince Edward County for that story. Next up is the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN Cobourg, Jeff Gard, about a council vote on providing free transit for residents during the downtown reconstruction project.
The Walton Street reconstruction project got underway Tuesday in Port Hope, and that night, council voted at its committee of the whole meeting to make its transit service free within the urban area of the municipality for 6 months starting May 7th. A staff report cited the loss of a number of parking spaces throughout and in close proximity to the construction area and within select municipal public parking lots while the downtown is dug up. The estimated loss in revenue for the municipality is $21,000 during that time period, and the rural's accessible bus will also be free within the urban boundary. Fares will still be collected for the route that travels from Port Hope's Town Hall to Cobourg with stops at Northumberland Mall, Northumberland Hills Hospital, and Walmart. Fares are $2.50 for adults and $2 for ages 4 to 17 and seniors 55 and up. The hours of operation for Port Hope Transit are 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday to Friday and 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturdays, with no service on Sundays. Port Hope Deputy Mayor Claire Holloway-Wadwani said during the meeting she thinks this is a great opportunity for residents to explore other forms of transportation.
I, for one, am really hopeful that this will provide us with an opportunity as a community to get used to other forms of transportation and realize that these are actually forms of transportation that we can be making more use of here in our community.
Reporting for CFWN Northumberland 89.7 FM, I'm Jeff Gard.
Thank you to Jeff Gard from CFWN Cobourg for that story. Coming up next, we have the Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region, as well as CFRC's community concert and events calendar. This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. After a dreary, wet, and stormy start to the week, Thursday, May 2nd brought us beautiful sunshine at a temperate 20 degrees Celsius. Overnight, things are dropping down to 7 degrees and it will be clear and cool. Friday, May 3rd, another 20-degree day and another day full of beautiful, brilliant sunshine. However, there is a 30% chance of precipitation overnight with a low of 9 degrees. Saturday, May 4th, it's going to be cloudy with a 30% chance of precipitation, daytime high of 18 degrees, dropping down to 9 degrees overnight. Sunday, May 5th, similar temperature, but without the rain. It will be cloudy and warm at 18 degrees. Look for a high chance of humidity. Moving now into Monday, May 6th, it will be a partially cloudy, partially sunny day with a daytime high of 18 degrees. And then Tuesday, May 7th, 40% chance of precipitation with a daytime high of 20 degrees. This concludes the Environment Canada Weather Report, and now we move over to the CFRC Community Concert and Events Calendar for the week. Have an event you'd like covered on our website and news programming? Contact us via cfrc.ca today. The Kingston Public Market will be held at Springer Market Square on 216 Ontario Street. The public market features local vendors and will be open from 8:30 to 4 p.m. every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday until late fall. To view a full list of vendors, visit kingstonpublicmarket.ca/vendors. Explore distinctive handmade ceramics created by local artists at the Kingston Potters Guild Spring Sale at the Tet, taking place from May 2nd to May 5th. Join the Kingston Potters Guild, a cherished Ontario pottery community, as they bring a diverse selection of functional and decorative pottery. Whether you're looking for gifts for the family, something special for friends, or a treat for yourself, their collection is something for everyone. And of course, don't miss the chance to find the perfect Mother's Day gift. Visit kingstonpotterguild.ca for more information. Also on May 2nd, the Juvenis JF Youth Film Night is a one-night event in Kingston showcasing local youth-made films. It is an opportunity for youth filmmakers to show their work and to connect with other artists within the community. JF Youth Film Night last season showed 7 diverse short films from local youth filmmakers, and they hope to show even more this season. This event is part of the Juvenis Festival and is produced in partnership with the Broom Factory and Tourism Kingston. For updates, follow at JF Film Night on Instagram. For more information and to buy tickets, go to www.juvenisfestival.ca/youthfilmnight2024. Come see Chris Jackson live at Blue Martini on Friday, May 3rd from 6:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. You never know who will join Chris on stage, but be prepared to be entertained as he delivers some amazing rock and classic rock favorites. Come early to snag your seat and warm up for the show. On the first weekend in May every year, Jane's Walk, a free festival of volunteer-led walks, takes place in hundreds of cities around the world, including Kingston. These walks encourage us to discover more about our cities and to connect with our neighbors in Kingston. This year, there will be 20 uniquely different walks. They will include various aspects of human life and wildlife, past and present. They will lead us through green spaces and historic neighborhoods, and a couple will take us to final resting places. Details of the walks, times, the leaders, and meeting place may be found at janeswalkkingston.wordpress.com. The annual Homegrown Live Music Festival takes place Saturday, May 4th, 2024 in Kingston. This year, over 130 bands will be playing at 16 venues throughout the day. Each venue will be showcasing their own music genre. Check out local indie and alternative music at Blue Martini, country music at The Buckle, and more. As always, all access wristbands will be $10 at the door of each venue. All proceeds go to the Joe Chitlin Memorial Music Instrument Lending Library. Visit homegrownlive.ca for more information. Are you a trans, non-binary, genderqueer, genderfluid, or any other non-cisgender person who wants a safer space to swim and to meet other students slash wider trans community members? Head over to the Athletics and Recreation Center at 283 Earl Street on May 5th at 2:30 p.m. for a solidarity swim. Swimmers will meet at the ARC Earl Street entrance at 2:20 p.m. This event is free and open to the wider Kingston community. For more information and to register, visit gogalesgo.com. If you're looking for some live music to finish off the week, be sure to see Jay Smith live at the Caesar Company on Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m. This concludes CFRC's community concert and events calendar for the week.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and New Leaf Link. Don't forget to visit CFRC for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter at CFRC. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Have a wonderful day. Thank you for tuning into The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. We'll see you next time.
Did you know that New Leaf Link offers day programming for adults with developmental disabilities? We serve families in Kingston and South Frontenac. Our program focuses on arts, healthy living, and community connections, including summer camp. New Leaf Link's caring staff and talented instructors provide a place for everyone to learn together and build friendships. If you or someone you know would like to join our program, please visit newleaflink.ca for more details. Together, we can grow, connect, and belong. Your true, true friend loves you just as
you are. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.